Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our briefing this morning. My name is Carol Werner. I'm the Executive Director of the Environmental and Energy Study Institute. We're very, very glad to have you all here this morning for this important release of a new groundbreaking study called Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency, Economic Drivers for the 21st Century. This is an extremely exciting topic because I think there is increased interest and excitement around the country, and we're seeing it in media, in many stories, in business magazines, business sections of newspapers, and many more conversations going on at the university and community college level in terms of looking at what is really the potential for jobs in new technologies as we both refine technologies on the efficiency and renewable side so that they become ever more, ever better, ever more efficient, develop new technologies, and also as we really develop a workforce to deploy them across the country. So this is a very exciting time. This report that has been commissioned by the American Solar Energy Society is the most comprehensive look that has really been done at this really important area of looking at economic drivers for this century. And to start off our briefing this morning, we will first hear from Brad Collins, who is the Executive Director of the American Solar Energy Society. And I just want you to know that we are expecting Senator Salazar of Colorado, and we anticipate that he will be coming sometime between 11 and 11:15. So we will just go with the flow in terms of our program this morning. And so now I'd like to welcome Brad.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a bright, sunny room, isn't it? Isn't it nice?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to just take a minute and try to give you some context for this study. And if I can find my device here, give a little bit of propaganda about the American Solar Energy Society. We were founded in 1954-55. So we've been around for over 50 years. And I was thinking this morning in preparation for these remarks, besides publishing this magazine, which I hope you all subscribe to. If you're interested in renewable energy or energy efficiency in the Belt environment, you should be reading this. For over 20 years, we've been hosting the National Solar Energy Conference for 37 years. And I was doing a rough calculation as I was trying to get some sleep last night in a strange hotel room. But that's over 10,000 technical papers we've put in our proceedings over that time. So we've sort of been, for a long, long time, sort of the established, if you will, renewable energy, energy efficiency organization to try to bring to decision makers, to the public and to other professionals, good, competent, technical information they can count on. We also do the National Solar Tour, which was done this last October, just completed, where about 115,000 to 120,000 Americans visited solar buildings in their communities across the country. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the economic drivers for the 21st century to try to tee this up. First off, why this comprehensive study? It was really critical for us to establish for the first time a broad definition of what do you mean by energy efficiency in industry. How many jobs does that represent? What is the revenue from those industries? And perhaps more challenging, or equally challenging, what do you mean by a renewable energy industry? And this is from the resource extraction all the way through the supply chain, all the way through the distribution, the installation, of ultimately into operation and maintenance. All of those jobs. How many is involved in that? No one has ever looked at these in the breadth of all the renewable energy technologies or in the breadth of the energy efficiency industries. So we needed to have a base case. If you don't have a base case, you cannot forecast progress. And so this was a critical ingredient. We hope that this base case will be used moving forward for other researchers in economics and allied fields as the foundation point from which we can go forward. It also was to allow an estimate, like I said, of the size for sales, tax revenue, jobs, occupational and skill sets. And then finally, we wanted to forecast growth in these industries to the year 2030. We're using 2030 because it's far enough ahead that we have an opportunity to have fairly competent forecasting data now, but it's not too far ahead that people don't understand the sense of urgency and action that we need. So we had three growth scenarios to 2030 that we're going to talk about this morning. One of them is a base case, which is basically IEA continued forward. There's a moderate case, which is basically a 15% of our energy comes from, of our electrical energy comes from renewable sources. And then an aggressive scenario, or an advanced scenario, where 30% or more comes from renewable sources. These all very much factor into how many jobs, how much money is in those industries. So I want to review for you very quickly the important findings. In 2006, in other words, the base scenario as to where we were last year, the most recent data, literally 8.5 million Americans work in these industries. That is substantially, orders of magnitude beyond what anyone else has been able to determine are the effect, if you will, of employment in energy efficiency, renewable energy in this country. Generated in 2006 nearly $1 trillion of economic revenue. Those industries were larger than General Motors, Walmart, and ExxonMobil combined in 2006. By 2030, under the aggressive scenario, under this forecast, that could be 40 million Americans working in energy efficiency and renewable energy. That would be nearly one out of every four Americans would be working in what has been called green-collar jobs. One in four. So clearly, one of the statements that we need to have as a takeaway today is that green-collar industries could be the economic driver for the 21st century, which is indeed the title of the publication. And finally, under the aggressive scenario, the RE and EE industries could generate $4.53 trillion by 2030 in annual revenue. So this report, I just want to put this in context for you, is the second of a three-part series that the American Solar Energy Society has embarked upon. And I want to put this in context because I think it's important to understand. The first part was a presentation of this study. And this study is called Tackling Climate Change in the U.S., the Potential Carbon Emissions Reductions from Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy by 2030. This particular study says the following. It says that we indeed have a serious crisis, an atmospheric, driven by atmospheric carbon, caused mainly from the burning of fossil fuels. How do you reduce that? And can you reduce that with existing technologies? The answer is yes. And the study will show that through energy efficiency and just six types of renewable energy technologies, you can fall between 60 and 80% of the projected fall, between 60 and 80% of the projected carbon in the atmosphere by 2030 by a broad deployment of those technologies. This, like all of the ACES studies, is free on our website. You can download it. It's 218 pages, so don't do it on a dial-up. The second piece of this is what we're releasing today, which is our economic study. So we have, if you will, the environment or climate mitigation work, and now we have the economic driver piece of the work. And finally, in May, we will roll out a series of policy recommendations to mitigate atmospheric carbon. And coincidentally, when you mitigate atmospheric carbon, you're going to create jobs. And those jobs are the jobs that are described in here. So one of the other takeaways I hope you have when you leave here is that the challenge of economic growth and the challenge of carbon in our atmosphere, the solution to those significant challenges is the same. That's the good news. The solution to that is a broad deployment of energy efficiency and renewable energy technologies in our country. The other takeaway should be that these are jobs here. They cannot be outsourced. The technologies that have been developed through our tax dollars over the years at the national laboratories and elsewhere through private industry that have evolved these technologies need to stay in this country. If you look at the wind industry, for example, that technology was discovered here, brushed with the very first commercial scale wind turbine, which was in the city of Cleveland two centuries ago now, is now being manufactured, it's being imported into our country. Photovoltaic, or solar electric generation, was a technology that was perfected in this country. It was invented at AT&T Labs in 1954, and now we are buying many of those products from Japan and from Germany and elsewhere. We have to keep this technology in our country. We have to use it as an economic driver. The mandate we have for this research has always been RD&D, research, development, and deployment. And we failed, I think, on the last D. We've been successful in the research and development, but we failed in the deployment. We send the R&D technology somewhere else. They put it into production, manufacture it, and sell it back to us. In the new energy economy of the 21st century, we need to be the ones developing, deploying, and selling those products. And clearly, it could be the economic driver for the 21st century. That's my contact information. If you need to reach me, I'd be happy to speak to each and every one of you. But I will direct you, please, to our website where all of these reports are available free as downloads. If you're with the media, and I hope many of you are, I please advise you to put that up there so that people can get this report themselves, they can download it, they can digest it, and they can share it. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the principal investigator of this study and the author of this report, Roger Bezdek. Roger is the president of Management Information Services, Inc., which is a D.C.-based research firm specializing in energy and environmental projects, which he's been engaged in for years. We're very proud to have him as a director of this research and as our key speaker today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brad. Abraham Lincoln famously said that before we can determine where we're going, we have to determine from whence we came. That is a major purpose of the research project I'll be summarizing here this morning. Over the past several decades, actually, you've probably heard all kinds of wild, wonderful estimates and forecasts and projections of renewable energy, energy efficiency, solar energy. 10 or 20 years from now, if we do X, Y, Z, we'll have three times as much revenues, four times as many jobs, and so forth. All such forecasts have been totally meaningless because no one until now knew what the size of these industries actually are or were in this case last year. So a very major contribution of the study I'm talking about today is the estimation of what the size in comprehensive detail of these industries actually is today. Once we've established that in detail, that what we have, as Brad indicated, we can begin to do forecasts that actually make sense, which we've done for the U.S. and Ohio, according to three scenarios as indicated. This is a snapshot of the size of the renewable energy and energy efficiency industries in the U.S. in 2006. As Brad indicated, just under $1 trillion in gross revenues, directly employed in the industry about 3.7 million people, a total number of jobs generated directly and indirectly throughout the economy by these industries is about 8.5 million. For both sets of industries, in this case renewable energy industry, we broke down the industry in detail by industry, sector, subsector, by technology. Here's a summary of the renewable energy technologies in 2006. Revenues, sales, jobs directly in the industry, and jobs, total jobs directed directly and indirectly throughout the economy. About $40 billion in revenues in 2006, just short of 200,000 people employed directly in the industry, and total jobs generated about 450,000. Energy efficiency, of course, is a much larger sector of the economy, again broken down in some detail here. In 2006, about $930 billion in revenues, about 3.5 million people employed within the industry, total number of jobs, something that generated directly and indirectly throughout the economy by energy efficiency technologies, products, etc., is just over 8 million. The impact of these industries, at present, this is not 20 years from now, a pie-in-the-sky forecast, anything like that, at present is very, very significant. It's enormous. The sales of these two industries are a lot larger than the combined sales of the largest U.S. corporations, Walmart, Exxon, and GM. Both RE&E are growing more rapidly than the U.S. average, and they contain some of the most rapidly growing industries in the country, such as fuel cells, biofuels, wind, etc. 8.5 million jobs, more than $100 billion in industry profits, more than $150 billion in increased federal, state, and local government tax revenues. This is being generated, these numbers are being generated today. Again, this is not a forecast, this is an actuality. So these industries have progressed to the point where they're a very significant driver for the U.S. economy. One of the things you want to look at, of course, is what kind of jobs are we talking about here? What kind of people working in this industry? This is one snapshot of what we've done. We took some of the major occupations and skills, looked at the salary levels, educational requirements, the training requirements, degree levels, current salaries. And one of the points I want to emphasize throughout this presentation here is that we talk about green collar jobs or jobs in the renewable energy industry. We're talking 96, 97, 98% of the jobs generated, both directly and indirectly, are the same type of jobs generated in almost any industry in the economy. We're talking about engineers, we're talking about scientists, we're talking about truck drivers, we're talking about machinists, welders, janitors, security guards, and so forth. There are a small segment that are ecologists or environmental specialists, renewable energy specialists, but that's only a very small portion of the total number of jobs generated. Here you can see that salary levels range widely from well into the six digits down to something one-third, one-fourth of that. The education and training requirements range from a PhD down to some minimal on-the-job training, apprenticeship programs, and so forth. I think the next slide here brings this up in even more forcefully. We looked at a prototype 250-person wind turbine manufacturing company in the U.S. What kind of occupations are involved? We broke it down into about 80 occupations. Here's a summary of some of them. And again, you see they're all skill levels, all education levels, all level of training, experience, expertise, are ranging from a very high level, both in terms of education, training, and salaries, to a relatively low level. But again, the important point here is we're talking about engineers, we're talking about welders, sheet metal workers, truck drivers, clerks, sales representatives, tool and die makers, exactly the same type of people who would be employed in a firm manufacturing any kind of product, be it automobiles, being it tractors, being it airplanes, or what have you. The difference here, of course, is this is a factory that produces wind turbines. So the kind of jobs generated here, and there will be millions and millions of them, except for a very small fraction, are the same type of jobs people are doing today in most any industry in the economy. A very important point to keep in mind as we go through this. As Brad indicated, once we establish a baseline for 2006, which we hope will be the baseline now for any forecasts of these industries made from here on out, we looked at three scenarios to the year 2030. The base case is essentially business as usual. An advanced scenario where we looked at what may be possible both economically and technologically at a maximum if we went all out for the next quarter century or so, than a moderate scenario that fell between the two. This is what the results look like, again, in summary, for 2030. In the base case, revenues in terms of 2006 dollars, the total would grow to about 1.9 trillion. In the moderate scenario, about 2.4 trillion. The aggressive scenario, about $4.5 trillion in 2030. Total jobs created, again, this is directly and indirectly, both in the industry and by the industries. Under the base case, it'd be about 16 million jobs. The aggressive scenario would be about 21 million. The aggressive scenario, the moderate scenario would be 21 million. The aggressive scenario would be about 40 million. Under the aggressive scenario, in 2030, renewable energy and energy efficiency are generating, either directly or indirectly, about 1 in 4, 1 in 5 jobs in the economy. The economy really has been turned around, if you wish, or restructured, where renewable energy and energy efficiency are very important driving force. But again, for this to happen, we're talking about a maximum all-out effort for the next quarter century. This is just a chart showing the different scenarios in 2030, some of the renewable energy technologies. You can see the vast difference. This is sales in billions of 2006 dollars. Some sectors under the different scenarios obviously grow more rapidly than others. This is the same thing for jobs in each of these specific technology areas. Similar to the growth in revenue, is only different because some of the technologies have different per unit labor requirements than the others. This this chart, we broke down the occupations and skills generated by these industries into about 500 occupation and skill levels. There's a small subset of them. You can see again the two points here. First, that between the base case and the advanced scenario, there's a huge difference in the number of jobs generated in each of these occupation and skill areas. Secondly, again, there's a wide range of occupation and skill requirements generated throughout the economy. Chemists, computer sciences, computer scientists, IT managers, general managers, sales reps, welders, and so forth. It's a very wide spectrum of people employed at all levels throughout the economy. Again, something I want to emphasize, that renewable energy and energy efficiency can generate, and will generate millions of jobs for all types of workers throughout the economy. We wanted to see what the situation looked like at a state level, and we looked at the state of Ohio and found that in 2006 there was a substantial impact of these industries in the state of Ohio. Total just over $50 billion in revenues, a little over 200,000 jobs, people employed within the industries, a total number of jobs generated directly and indirectly in the state of Ohio, just over 500,000. We use the same breakdown here as we did at the national level. You can see what the sales revenues and jobs created in Ohio in renewable energy were in 2006. Similarly, for energy efficiency industry in Ohio in 2006. So we're drilling, as you'll see in a few minutes more, we're drilling more and more deeply down into detail here. We're now going to the state level, by industry, by sector, and something, of course, we can do for any state that is required. We began to look in more detail at what kind of firms, what kind of companies are there currently in Ohio in energy efficiency and renewable energy. We found that there were hundreds and hundreds of them already located in the state doing business. They're large, they're small, they're located throughout the state, they range in size from several employees to a very large firm, and they're engaged in a wide variety of activities throughout the economy. We identified several hundred of them. This is just a subset of about two dozen of the firms, what sector they're in, EERE or EENRE, and where in the state they're located. And again, you can see that they're located in every large city, small city, rural area throughout the state of Ohio, very widespread. And again, this is not any kind of pie-in-the-sky forecast. These are actual firms doing business, sales, revenues, making profits, paying taxes, and employing people in the state of Ohio today. Further drilled down, we looked at a subset of those firms to see, again, where they're located, what sector they're in, REE, what have you, the kinds of products and services they provide, and how many jobs they're creating within the firm itself in the state of Ohio. And again, it ranges from very small firms, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 10 people, to large firms employing hundreds of people. We then looked at the same set of scenarios impacting Ohio as we did nationally, and we see analogously that the three cases differ substantially. In the base case, in 2030, in the state, it'd be about $100 billion in revenues generated. The moderate scenario would rise to $120 billion. The aggressive scenario would be $220 billion. This is sales and revenues in the state of Ohio. The jobs created under the base case, about just short of 1 million. This is, again, jobs directly and indirectly generated in the state of Ohio. The moderate scenario would be 1.2 million, and the aggressive scenario would be nearly 2.3 million jobs. We found that indeed renewable energy can generate new jobs in Ohio. This is a comparison of 2006 actual, the 2030 advanced scenario case. You see that the potential, huge growth potential involved across all renewable energy technology areas, wind, photovoltaic, geothermal, and so forth. And again, we broke it down by occupation, occupations and skills within the state of Ohio. And again, the comparison here is between the base case and the advanced scenario, and see there are literally thousands and thousands of jobs generated for each of these. This is a subset of, again, of 500 occupations for all types. Carpenters, cost estimators, graphic designers, engineers, IT managers, analysts, plumbers, welders, and so forth. All jobs, all types of jobs, a wide variety of jobs are generated and are being generated and will be generated by renewable energy and energy efficiency. Again, these are jobs in the state of Ohio. Thus, we feel that energy efficiency and renewable energy offer development opportunities for Ohio and employment growth. They create a variety of jobs, many of them high paying, many of which in this case would of course take advantage of Ohio manufacturing skills. We feel that Ohio, with its traditional manufacturing base, can successfully recruit EE and IRE companies into the state. Unlike some industries, energy efficiency and renewable energy is a realistic target for job creation in Ohio or other states as far as that goes. There are many entrance points making the EE and IRE market easier to penetrate if Ohio can utilize its strength in workforce development, education, training, manufacturing, R&D, and so forth. Thus, our renewable energy and energy efficiency can create well-paying jobs in the state of Ohio or any other state as far as that goes. Many of these jobs will not be subject to foreign outsourcing. They're really on-the-ground jobs that have to be performed, in this case, in the state of Ohio. They're disproportionately weighted in terms of college-educated professional workers, many of which with advanced degrees. Also, requirements for a lot of highly skilled technical workers form the backbone, really, of the entrepreneurial society in the state. These are the kind of high-skilled, high-wage, technical, professional jobs that Ohio and the all states and regions seek to attract. However, we noted that Ohio is in competition with other states for these new energy economy jobs, or another way of stating that other states are in competition with Ohio for these jobs. It's not a zero-sum game. Obviously, Ohio would, any other state would generate from the general growth, would benefit from the general growth in the economy of these industries and jobs, but states that act proactively with appropriate policies, incentives, and so forth will come out relatively quite well here. Thank you, and I guess we'll go to questions now.
Thank you very, very much, Roger. And we will now turn to Drew McCracken, who is the director of the Washington office for the state of Ohio. And we wanted to make sure that someone from the state was here since they had been so involved with this whole effort and since Ohio was this case study. And Ohio historically has been such an important manufacturing state that has also gone through a lot of job losses in the manufacturing sector. So this is a very, very important and exciting time as Ohio really repositions itself in the new economy.
Well, thank thanks, Carol, and thanks to EESI and ACES for hosting this briefing this morning. On behalf of Governor Strickland and the state of Ohio, we appreciate the opportunity to discuss the exciting events taking place in Ohio around renewable energy and job creation, not the least of which is Governor Strickland's energy plan, which I'll discuss in a minute. First, let me thank ACES and Dr. Bezdik for their profile on the potential economic impact to Ohio of an expanded renewable energy and energy efficiency industry there. I'd also like to thank ACES for hosting its solar conference in Cleveland this past summer. The Ohio case study in the report, as you've just seen, contains numbers that serve only to reinforce the importance of renewables. In 2006, more than 200,000 renewable energy and efficiency jobs were created in Ohio, and another 300,000 jobs were created indirectly. As you saw, gross revenues for the combined sectors in Ohio exceeded $50 billion. It's no small number. What makes the potential of these new jobs so important for Ohio is the slow growth of Ohio's economy in general and the negative growth of our manufacturing sector in particular. As a historic leader in American manufacturing, Ohio still has a strong manufacturing infrastructure and workforce. What Governor Strickland hopes to do through his energy plan is to attract the jobs of the future with a new RPS, an advanced energy standard for Ohio. Ohio wants to be the manufacturing hub in the United States for renewable components. The rotors, controls, gearboxes, drivetrains, and towers for wind turbines, and the plastics and glass for photovoltaic cells and thin film technology, the latter of which we already produce in Ohio. Ohio has the capacity to become the research and manufacturing leader for the renewable sector. And with Governor Strickland's new proposal, we have the leadership as well. In August of this year, Governor Strickland introduced an energy plan for Ohio that includes a portfolio standard of 25% by 2025, at least half of which must be produced in Ohio. The governor's proposal also recognizes that a megawatt saved is just as valuable as a megawatt generated. By allowing the Public Utilities Commission to treat efficiency as a production cost, Ohio utilities will be required to meet at least 25% of the growth in electricity demand by achieving power-saving efficiencies. Governor Strickland's plan is not only about energy and the environment, it's also about jobs and progress. At least half of the 25% portfolio standard must come from renewable resources, and no more than half may come from advanced energy technologies such as clean coal and nuclear. To express the order of magnitude that we're talking about with Ohio's current energy use, let me say that Ohio is fifth among all states in overall energy consumption, spending more than $30 billion per year on energy. In the year 2025, Ohio's 12.5% renewable standard will exceed 20 million megawatt hours, an amount of energy comparable to the total energy used today by 14 states combined. We know we'll be competing with other states to attract these new renewable energy and energy efficiency companies to Ohio, and that an RPS by itself won't give us the edge that we need. But an RPS that creates a market in Ohio for renewables, coupled with Ohio's strong manufacturing base and our many top-tier research universities, will make Ohio a fierce competitor for these new jobs. And if we play our cards right, the ACES report predicts, as you just saw, that we could see between 1 and 2 million new jobs created by 2030. We know that an RPS can lead to real development. Michigan and Pennsylvania, both of which have a state RPS, each has more than 200,000 square feet of solar thermal collectors. Ohio has only 34,700 square feet. Moreover, in the past 2 years, 8 wind turbine manufacturing facilities have been built in the U.S., and 7 have gone to states with an RPS already in place. On a positive note, Ohio is already a leader in fuel cell development, due in large part to the $100 million Ohio Third Frontier project. Ohio's research institutions are conducting more than 125 fuel cell projects, totaling more than $50 million in research, and many leading fuel cell companies are already located in Ohio. We're moving forward in Ohio. Last week, the state Senate unanimously passed an energy bill 32-0. Now the legislation goes to the state House of Representatives, and we hope to have it passed by January. Governor Strickland feels the bill is even better now. It includes a 1% mandate for solar power. Looking at the numbers in the ACES report, and at the proposals in Governor Strickland's energy plan. We hope that new jobs will be created, the businesses will prosper, and the families and communities will benefit from the growth generated by an increased demand for renewable energy products. When in place, Ohio certainly won't have the first RPS in the nation. But our goal is for other states to achieve their renewable portfolio standards using technologies created in Ohio and equipment built in Ohio. Thanks again to EESI and ACES for allowing me to speak today and to all of you for being here.
Great, thank you, Dirk. Okay, we will go ahead and start our discussion period, and when Senator Salazar comes, we will have him join us up here to speak. And I think one of the things I was just struck by, since the Congress is right now deliberating with regard to energy bills that have passed both the House and the Senate and are being discussed in informal conference sessions, that when you talked about a 32-0, a unanimous vote in your state Senate, that seems to be a message that perhaps needs to be talked about here in this body, don't you think? Very, very impressive. You should make sure that your delegation talks that up. Anyway, let's open it up for your questions or comments, and if you could just identify yourself, please. All right, this is great. Okay, we'll start right here.
Rick Nelson, the Appalachian Regional Commission. I think Ohio is a great choice. But out of curiosity, why did you select Ohio?
Okay.
I'll address that. We selected Ohio for two reasons. One of them was it was going to be the site of our 2007 National Solar Energy Conference, which was in Cleveland. We wanted also to support, that's the first reason. The second reason, we wanted to support the work of the new governor there, who wanted to have a renewable portfolio standard, some similar bill put in place, and we felt that one of the missing ingredients for that debate was a good, competent argument about the economic drivers that could occur if you had this in this state.
Okay, right behind.
Mm-hmm. Greg Bishak, Senior Economist, Appalachian Regional Commission. Interesting study. Roger, I'm interested in the import content of the base case of 2006 for particularly the renewables, and then the import substitution assumptions going forward in your scenarios. How much of the domestic content is being assumed in the out years? And I have another question about what happens to demand growth.
In the base case, unfortunately, in the renewable energy sector, there was considerable import content because, as Brad indicated, the U.S. has lost leadership in many of these areas. We're actually importing wind turbines, wind technology, PV technology from Europe and Japan. In the energy efficiency area, there's less import content because it's really not amenable to import. You're talking about building efficiency. You're talking about recycling. You're talking about energy service companies and so forth.
The assumptions about import substitution going forward.
In the base case, it remains pretty much as is today, business as usual. In the advanced scenario, by definition, we have to assume that the import content gradually diminishes. We're assuming a massive, flat-out effort in the U.S. to develop these technologies. So we're assuming that certainly within a decade or less, we can reassume our leadership in many of these areas. And indeed, hopefully in the not-too-distant future, under that aggressive scenario, we'd actually be exporting technologies rather than importing them.
Okay, you're first.
And this is from the American Geophysical Union, and I guess this is really more from Mr. McCracken. I'm looking at the jobs and the kinds of positions created, and so it seems to me that you will also need an education bill for the 21st century. I'm looking from the jobs that you're going to need in K-12, for example, so much stronger math science than we have in this country at this point, but also some simplification of high schools and modern type vocational of high schools, and finally also ways for people who've lost their jobs to retrain and be able to do these kinds of works. And I'm just wondering where Ohio is on that one.
Well, We're doing a couple things. Last week, we announced the securitization of our tobacco payments from the Master Settlement Agreement in the amount of $5.05 billion. And a lot of that money is going to go to new schools. Interestingly, for this audience, I think we have one lead school in Ohio right now, and when we build, when we use this money to build new schools, we'll have 270 lead silver schools in Ohio. So we are planning new facilities. And in terms of training new workers and new teachers for this, and the governor's budget that was passed by the legislature also unanimously in June. And it's a Republican legislature and a Democratic governor, so there is a unique dynamic in Ohio right now. Included in that budget were $100 million in grants for the STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and math, for Ohio's both public and private universities. So we are taking that into consideration, trying to build from the ground up to welcome this new industry to Ohio.
Let me make a comment about that as well. One of the values of this study is precisely that. It gives you a description of the current workforce, and it gives you a description of the new energy economy workforce, which should lead people in higher education in particular to look at curriculum development changes so you can create the workforce locally that you'll need for these types of jobs. ACES is engaged in a number of fronts with people in higher education, putting together curriculum not only at the university and college level, but at community colleges and junior colleges where many of these jobs are going to come from. So it's a great issue, the workforce development challenge as we migrate into this new energy economy is significant, and I think people are starting to pay attention to it, and we have a portal on our website for educators that you can investigate, particularly for K-12.
I might just mention there are a few other states that are also starting to really move in this direction, and I also want to call to your attention the fact that there are sort of green workforce development provisions that are in both the House and the Senate energy bills, and there is a little fact sheet that was on the table for you. Okay, there was a question right back here. Okay, and then we'll come back again.
Did most of that kind of analysis for the state of Ohio, and we did not discern any measurable huge gaps in workforce availability, primarily for the reason that there's an awful lot of unemployed or underemployed human resources in the state today. The state has shed at least 500,000 manufacturing jobs within the past decade. So there's a huge, huge available labor force there. And quite frankly, the renewable energy industry, as indicated in Ohio, is not all that great. Looking to the future, and if Ohio expects to increase it substantially year by year by year, they're liable to be some spot and regional shortages. Not necessarily going to even exclusively at the PhD or college level, but all levels, I think you're liable to see it at the quote lower levels, the community college level vocational training, apprenticeships programs, on-the-job training type of area. So it's something that needs to be looked into a lot more, especially as Ohio is, as it appears, is very serious in pushing this aggressively in the coming years.
Did you want to add anything, Drew? Or? Okay. There's a question right here first. We'll take them.
I'm Sherry Dean with the D.C. Department of Youth Rehabilitation Services, and very interested in whether there would be any affirmative efforts or very concrete partnerships to ensure that persons in prisons and our youthful offenders have opportunities in terms of job creation and attainment skills.
Drew, do you
want
to speak to that?
I can try. It's a very interesting question. I don't know if Ohio has any specific plans at the moment. I know we have
Governor Strickland put in place a requirement about requiring all departments in the state government to transition their own energy usage to more efficient levels. But that doesn't address your concern about the actual inmates of facilities and other people in the system. I know all our departments in Ohio are working together, our Department of Youth Services and Department of Natural Resources, so it's, I think it's a great suggestion to limit all. Take that.
And also considering that the prison industry is a $1 billion industry, right, whether there's a way for this to merge in such a way that there's a benefit for people coming out of prison.
Right. And there are some provisions within the energy bill, workforce development programs, that also take that into account.
I gave a testimony in front of the D.C. City Council a couple weeks ago on that issue. Give me your name and I'll forward it to you.
Okay, terrific. And Brad, you wanted to add something?
I just make a comment that in regards to the earlier question as well, there seems to be fairly significant work shortage in the state of California, where the initiative for 1 million solar roofs has put a big driver in place for PV, particularly on residents, because all that can only be on residents. And so one of the opportunities that the National Electrical Contractors Association and IBEW are doing is to try to create a workforce development program, particularly in Southern California, that's going to target people who were recently released from incarceration to train them in these job skills as apprentice electricians with specialties in solar energy applications.
Okay, question here first.
No. Benjamin Goldstein, Center for American Progress. Roger, I've come across this in my work as an argument that we know that renewable energy creates more jobs per unit of energy than fossil-based energy. Some economists argue whether that's inefficient and is less going to depress wages. So I was curious about your thoughts.
Yeah, I've gotten in debate with various people on the same issue, and you're correct. If you can't generate more jobs per dollar of expenditure, per dollar of revenues or whatever, and at the same time generate predominantly higher paying jobs, but as I've indicated, the vast majority of the jobs generated would not be for solar energy scientists or renewable energy engineers, that sort of thing. That are generated at all levels, most of the jobs in the economy are not for rubber-shod people, they're for secretaries, clerks, truck drivers, and so forth. On the other hand, some of these technologies are very highly sophisticated, they're very highly technical, and you're not talking about necessarily inexpensive energy here either. So I think it's a good question, but the answer to which is still very much open.
Okay. There's a question. Do you still have a question? Okay. Okay. Go ahead. All right.
I may have seen this movie before. How is this study different than the eco jobs that were promised and the recycling jobs that were promised? And then the follow-up is, are there health care considerations and provisions included in the Ohio plan?
Okay, first of all, as I tried to indicate, a major contribution or benefit of the studies, these are not jobs that are being promised. These are jobs that are actually out there. These are our companies and firms that are already in the business throughout the United States and throughout Ohio. Now the forecasts, of course, are as indeterminate as any forecast. They're depending upon what happens to the economy, what happens to government policy, and so forth. But again, important point, these are not jobs that are, quote, prompt. They're jobs that are actually out there today. We've broken them down by a high level of detail by technology, industry, sector, subsector, occupation, skill, education requirements, and so forth. With respect to the impacts on the healthcare sector, it's not something that we looked at in any level of detail.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Christopher Krause with the National Environmental Education Foundation. My question is probably for Dr. Benedict. In China, Fitzline and U.S. energy efficiency industry in 2006, I'm just kind of curious how you define what would be an energy efficiency job in a particular industry segment. I think installations is pretty straightforward, but when you get to like computers, copiers, and fax machines, just how did you define like what would be an energy efficiency job?
Analyzing the renewable energy sector or renewable energy industry was much, much easier than energy efficiency because at least renewable energy, there's a lot we don't know, it's pretty well defined in terms of service industry. The energy efficient industry, it was an extremely difficult, complex, time-consuming task, and each sector and each technology had to be handled differently. With respect to computers and fax machines and that, we basically looked at Energy Star ratings and what portions of each of the detailed 3 and 4 and 5 digit NAICS industries were comprised of Energy Star rated equipment and processes and that, and included that as that sector's contributor, or that part of the sector that is energy efficient.
Okay, great. We're now, Senator Salazar has arrived, and so we would now like to turn to him, and we're delighted to have Senator Salazar join us this morning. He is in a very, very good position to be dealing with all of these issues since he serves on the Senate Energy Committee, he's on the Senate Agricultural Committee, and he's on the Senate Finance Committee. So he's got it kind of all together. And he is also from a state that has really made terrific policy changes and really moving forward with regard to renewable energy. And Senator Salazar is also one of the co-sponsors of the green workforce development provisions that's in the Senate Energy Bill. And he is soon to be the senior senator from Colorado. Senator Salazar.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Carol, and thank you for putting this event together to all of you who are here. And I have to say to Brad Collins, as the executive director of the American Solar Institute, the fact that he is from Colorado and that he is here tells you how important the sun is to our state. And to Drew and to Roger, thank you for being up here, being the promoters and pushers for efficiency and renewable energies, and bringing your cause and your advocacy here to the United States Senate, where these issues are now in the fulcrum of the debate. And let me just back up and kind of put this in a perspective from my point of view as a United States Senator, as my former colleague Senator Gary Hart often reminded me of when I was running for the U.S. Senate several years ago. He said, before the term senator, when you go to represent our nation in the Capitol, comes the words United States. And so I have to think about these things in the context of what it means for our country today and to the 21st century and beyond, for my children and your children and our grandchildren and the whole future of our country. And there are three drivers that today, I think, bring us to where we are here in the Congress today on this issue of energy, which are new and which really are at the beginning of creating a clean energy revolution for America for the 21st century. Many of you here will well remember the days back when President Carter gave his speech to the nation saying that we needed to embrace energy independence with the moral equivalent of war. And many of you here, or at least a few of you, will remember back when Richard Nixon decided that we needed to have energy independence, and he coined that term after the formation of OPEC. And yet, what happened under both, frankly, Republican and Democratic administrations through the 80s and through the 90s, America slept. And it went from a point where, when those statements of great aspiration were made in the 1970s, there was a time when we were importing 30% of our oil from foreign countries. Fast forward today to 2007, in March of this year, 67% of our energy was imported from foreign countries. We've gone from 30% to 67%. Look at what's happening today. If you read the papers this morning at the price of oil, where we are now right knocking on the door of $100 per barrel of oil, unprecedented in the recent modern times of America. So when you look at all of that, really what has happened is that America has started to awaken. America has started to awaken in the last 2 years, and now as we move forward with major legislation here in the United States Congress and hopefully legislation that the President ultimately will sign, we are creating a new energy revolution for America. We are today, as I speak here, getting ready to go back on the Farm Bill in the U.S. Senate. Probably, it can be argued, the most important provision in the Farm Bill for this year will be Title IX of the Farm Bill, which moves forward in a major way with respect to energy efficiency and renewable energies. It'll be the most significant investment ever made in rural America, and it really strives to achieve an agenda which many of us have articulated and advocated for a long time, and that is that we can grow our way to energy independence here in America, that we can harness the power of the sun and the power of the wind, the power of our biomass in order for us to become energy independence. And it's not only the Farm Bill that will help us get that done. That is but one monumental chapter in a very important chapter at the beginning of the century for us on energy, because we also have the Energy Bill, which we passed out of the Senate, which hopefully by the time we get done with that bill by the end of this year, we'll have the Finance Committee provisions that will be attached to that bill, which will create the jet engine for us to be able to fly fast forward into this new energy economy and clean energy economy for the 21st century. So I am very, very optimistic about what can happen. Let me just give you a few anecdotes off the top of my head about some things that I have seen happen since I came here to the U.S. Senate on the issue of energy. First, when I came here 2.5 years ago, 2 years and 8 months ago, I wanted to go back to Colorado and visit some of our energy programs, and so I decided I would go to the National Renewable Energy Lab. And I remember on my first visit to NREL, meeting with the executive director and asking him, what is it that we can do with the sun and the wind and biomass and with renewable energies? And this is a person who, part of the Department of Energy, who said to me, he said, we can get to 30% by the year 2020. He says, the only thing that's lacking in America right now is the political will to get us there. That's the only thing that's lacking. We have the technology. We know how to do it. We can get there. We can get there. And so I am very hopeful that the agenda that I have worked on in the Agriculture Committee, on the Energy Committee, and on the Finance Committee will make it into law and will help get us there. Secondly, let me say that there has been progress. There has been huge progress that has been made, even in a very short time of the last 2 years. I use my state as an example. 2 years ago in Colorado, we had almost no wind energy that was being produced in my state because of an initiative that created a renewable portfolio standard in my state back in 2004, where we said we'd produce 15% of our energy from renewable resources by the year 10% by the year 2015. Lots of things have started to happen in my state. And I just want to mention two things as examples. And much of it has been fueled also by what we have been able to do here in Washington. But the first, with respect to wind, you know, we went from almost no wind power in 3 years ago in my state of Colorado to the point where by the end of next year, by the end of 2008, we will have almost 1,500 megawatts of power being generated by the wind. Almost 1,500 megawatts of power being generated by the wind. Now that's the equivalent of almost 4 coal-fired power plants. And that's clean energy coming from the wind in my state in a very short period of time. But it doesn't stop with the wind, because our largest utility, Xcel, which in 2004 was very opposed to RPS, now has been one of the champions of moving forward with the doubling of the RPS, which we actually accomplished in our state legislature this last legislative session. Well, this largest utility has decided that this is the wave of the future. And so it's not just about wind, but what they are now doing, Xcel, is they're harnessing the power of the sun with respect to building the largest solar electrical generating farm in the entire world, in my native San Luis Valley in the southern part of the state of Colorado. So that place that I grew up knowing as the land of the turquoise skies, because the sun shines almost on average 350 days out of the year, is going to be one of the places where we harness the power of the sun in order to meet our energy needs for the future. And when I speak to the researchers and business people of the state of Colorado who are now working on the solar energy agenda, they can tell you that the technological breakthroughs that we are beginning to see and are about ready to make with respect to the sun will allow us to harness the power of the sun in a way that has been unimaginable. A business person in Fort Collins, out of Fort Collins, who's been working on solar collection technologies to try to get beyond the photovoltaic technology that we now have, gets so excited about what he sees on the very near horizon and the year or two ahead about how we can be much more effective in capturing the energy of the sun. And if I remember his statistic, at one point in time he said if we could only capture a few minutes of the sunlight that shines on the earth every day, that would be enough to power all of the energy needs of the entire world. And so there are things that we can do on the sun where we are just beginning to open up those doors of opportunity for us here in the U.S. Senate. What that has meant, and what I will continue to champion, is moving forward on solar with respect to production tax credits so that we can have production tax credits that extend out to 2016. If you are out in Wall Street or you're in the private sector and you want to make an investment with respect to solar, it's difficult to make some of those investments when you're only looking at a 2 or a 3 year time horizon. And so our hope is that we will move forward with the extension of the production tax credit still at least the year 2016. In addition to that, we need to find ways of getting the energy produced from the sun to the places where it is consumed. And we have some transmission problems, which I'm sure all of you here are familiar with, and hopefully we'll be able to help deal with those transmission problems so that we can get the energy to the place where it is consumed. And thirdly, the continuing efforts that we must all make to take the covers off of the technology, which is now in a stage where it can start being deployed out into the commercial market so we can take much more advantage of the sun. And I could speak about lots of other facets of energy, but let me just spend one quick second, if you will, on energy efficiency. If you look at energy efficiency, it's the low-hanging fruit, you know? It's not something that requires a lot of new technology. You know, I spoke to the Alliance to Save Energy at Johns Manville in Denver, Colorado, about a month or two ago. And in that room were the CEOs of the major companies of America, the CEOs of Johns Manville, the CEOs of Dow Chemical, and a whole host of others. And why were they there? They saw the business opportunity in moving forward with a new kind of insulation that we can put into our buildings, the new kinds of designs that we have for building the kinds of green buildings that we can build here in America. And there is excitement about what we can do with efficiency, because we all know the huge waste that occurs with how we consume energy within our buildings in our country. The real estate industry, the commercial real estate industry, they recognize that there are huge, huge cost savings when they embrace efficiency with respect to how we build our buildings and make them green here in America. Just two quick examples. A year or so ago, I went to Fort Collins to help celebrate the opening up of a new school that had been built with these green energy concepts in mind. And one of the things that they have already found is that in the first year of operation of this school, they have saved over $100,000 in the utility costs for the school. And yet, when you look at what the construction costs were of that school relative to conventional costs, frankly, it was about the same. So they're going to be able to save a lot of money for that particular school. Yesterday, I went and spoke across the street at the American Friendship Service Office, which is an office located right to the north, to the east of us here in the Hart Building. Well, this national organization has come together to build a LEED certified building that actually uses geothermal as part of its heating and cooling capacity for that building in a manner that will save them very, very significant amounts in terms of their energy bills. So let me just conclude. We have a vote underway on a very important override of a presidential veto. And they need my vote down there in order for us to succeed on this one. So I'm going to go and vote. But let me just conclude Carol and Brad, Roger, Drew, all the rest of you who are here by saying that you come here today working on an agenda that is very exciting. It's an exciting agenda because the national security of America requires us to work on this agenda. The environmental security of our globe requires us to come around this agenda and to push it forward. And the economic opportunities for not only America but for the entire world are truly exciting on this agenda. So thank you all very, very much.